Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable panel for this Thursday, the 12th of November. Very nice to have you with us here in Studio A. We have a wonderful panel assembled. Let me introduce them to you. And then I have we have a couple of announcements, and then we'll get to the show. First of all, we welcome our dear friend, Dr. Alan Chartok, who is very nattily dressed, very you have a nice jacket this morning.
Huh.
Not that you aren't, always are.
Oh, where am I?
The epitome of spiffy right there.
Yes, the epitome of spiffy indeed. our wonderful friend, Rosemary Armeo, is here, University of Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter, joins us this morning. Thank you very much for being here.
You're welcome.
And Poughkeepsie Journal editor Stu Shinsky has made his way up the New York Thruway, and we could not be more delighted.
Well, pleasure to be here, and quite rainy and foggy on the Thruway this morning.
Yeah, I
not good weather.
No, not great weather, but
better than snow.
But we'll be your little ray of sunshine today.
Looking forward to it.
So tomorrow we're going to be doing the roundtable panel live in front of a studio audience at the Linda. And we're all very, very happy about this.
Indeed.
It's our panel, our dream team panel. We will have. So this is going to be like this.
You got Kobe Bryant.
This is going to be like a Republican debate. In that we have so many people on stage that they'll probably each get about 6 minutes of time. So, but Alan and Rosemary. Mm-hmm. Barbara and Mike, mm-hmm. Ray and Rich Honan. Yeah.
And you.
And I will host, yes. So by the way, if you would like to join us, we would love to have you join us. All we ask is that you call 1-800-323-9262,
yep.
Extension 189 is Colleen O'Connell.
Yeah.
And you pledge $100, you get a pair of tickets. What?
What are you doing?
I pledge you. You pledge $100.
I had a flashback to the fund drive.
No,
this is an extension of the fund drive.
So here's what happened. So we sold out the event.
Oh, cool.
And then what happened was people said, "Oh, unfortunately, I can't go." So we have some tickets open.
Cool.
So that way
just
we can. Yeah, I can tell you exactly. We have 20 pairs.
Cool. Yeah.
So that's how many we have. So that would be great. And if you want to pledge $100, you get a big red mug.
And
you
can have that in itself is $100 premium.
Absolutely. And you get
$100. You get a mini bagel. You get cream cheese.
We're going to have continental breakfast. We have breakfast. Yeah. We have coffee. The fruit. It's beautiful.
It's actually a deal.
It is such a deal. And
a big red mug.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
We'll show you.
Are you anti-Christmas?
No, look at my. I have the Dunkin' Donuts cup that says "Joy" on it with holly leaves and evergreens
in red and green.
Uh-huh.
That's
a Christian organization.
Is that the stupidest controversy you've ever heard?
It gets my vote for
it's
stupidest.
Up there.
Yeah.
So Trump's trying to make something of it.
He's trying to make something what?
Well, he has asked for a boycott of
Starbucks.
Of Starbucks.
It is coming out with its holiday mug, and in past years it's had like Merry Christmas or Joy to the World or
not
something.
Not even that. Like just it's, here, just like these, just like leaves and
yeah,
little stars
yeah.
and snowflakes.
Things that were not too Christian, but they said Christmas. This year it's simply a red cup with its logo on it.
Well, everybody knows the Reds are communists. What? Of
course. yeah, we can't hear you.
Why can't they hear me?
Because your mic isn't close enough to your face.
Because I have these new hearing aids now, see? So I think everybody can hear me because I can hear them. Don't you see?
So then Trump came out and said that he has a Starbucks in his Trump Tower, that he is willing to break the lease and say that people should boycott Starbucks because, quote, if he were president, everyone... This is a quote.
Gosh.
Everyone would be saying Merry Christmas.
Well, I think that would end up in the Supreme Court. That would be a fun case.
What do you mean? If he were president, he can tell you that when you meet somebody else on the street, you have to say Merry Christmas?
I think there's probably a constitutional issue in there, and it would end up
he
in
can't
the Supreme
do that.
Court.
Yeah.
Right.
Or you get deported.
Yeah.
Even if you're not from someplace
use
else.
Use the red cup or leave the country. That's what it sounds like.
But it's
there's a wall around the Starbucks.
We really have gotten nutty in this country. What's gone on?
Well, it's a brilliant political strategy. Look, there's a big fight over the evangelicals. There's a big fight over, the Christian community, which is by far the largest, in the United States. And you want those votes. So you say something which is clearly absurd. Mm. Like everybody would be saying Merry Christmas.
So here's my current conundrum, and maybe you can help me, panel, as you can be my psychological reinforcement in this. So my initial reaction to the Starbucks thing was, this is the stupidest thing I've ever heard of. And then I heard but then there's a woman in my town in Greenwich, and this was all over the news last night, that she went to the town board and is asking for the Washington County Fair to stop selling, because there are vendors there that sell the Confederate flag.
Oh, that's different.
It is different, I feel. However, it's one of those things like you keep saying to yourself, this isn't like we have so many other big issues to worry about. Is this really a fight that we want to have in this way? I feel that the cup thing is so significant or insignificant. And then you have something like this where there's this one woman standing up and saying, okay, there's a couple idiot vendors at the fair who are selling these flags. Should we stop that? And then I'm like ready to, you know, go protest.
Right.
Yeah, and go to the meetings and get all
right.
upset.
So they always tell you when you are outspoken, as some of us on this panel are, you have to pick your battles. My answer always is, okay, what's your battle then? What's the one you're going to give up all these small points and you're going to fight for one big thing? What is it? I think the battle is in all the small points.
Well, one has to look at the – here's where I get into trouble. One has to look at the differences. I mean – we had slavery in this country. We fought a civil war. You know, we do have freedom of speech, and we do, you know, one can say we do, but it doesn't mean we can't haul them off up before the court of public justice and let people know that we're upset by shoving this in front of people's faces. Don't you see?
I do see, and I think, you know, we have had major retailers in this country, Walmart being top of the list, of saying, okay, we're going to pull it from our stores. We're going to stop doing it. And so it doesn't seem unreasonable. Now, this comes to me personally because when we went into as my wife and I, who met at the fair, that's where we met. And
how did it go? Was there a pickup line?
She was the PR director and I was a reporter, so I was interviewing her, and then we never stopped interviewing each other.
Isn't that?
So
that's so romantic.
It is a
very
sweet story.
So, yeah.
Anyway, so okay, now let me get into the Confederate.
We sort of
flag.
Went on a tangent.
No, so so as we were walking into the fair, I said to her, I wonder how many Confederate flags we'll see. And she said, well, we won't see any. And I said, I bet you we do. And
sure enough,
and the vendors, there they were. And I was just surprised, but...
Were they doing a big business?
I don't know. That I don't know. I doubt it, but I don't know.
I hope not.
You know, Trump is just putting – Trump is basically capitalizing on the put the Christ back in Christmas debate, which has long simmered. And it's a talking point. He is basically touching something. And this is what Trump does so well. He knows where the magnet is, and he latches on to that issue.
All true, Stewie. But remember that his number one major opponent is Dr. Carson. And
yes.
So therefore, that is where he knows he has to go to capture those votes.
Yes.
So you do the thing heavily to the Christian right, and
well, that's where Carson's support is.
Well, that's right.
Huge.
So
numbers.
But is Trump ever going to get that?
Get what?
The Christian right.
Might get some.
I don't know. I see.
And by the way, you're
Cruz
right, Stewie.
Instead.
It's all about some.
Yes.
So if you could lose an election by 1 point. And you just get some of that group, mm-hmm. Then, you know, you win.
Erode the base. Erode right. it any way you can in different ways.
That seems different to me. Trump is bringing this, what we're calling a small issue, into a national discussion over who should be president. The woman in your local council is doing exactly what she should, going to the,
yeah,
to the government
resident.
Unit
yeah.
that's yeah. closest to him, yeah. trying to do something to protect, in her view, her home.
But
I think that's
mean,
great.
Should?
That's
I mean,
commendable.
She should. Trump shouldn't. Trump is
Correct.
Playing in.
Correct. Shouldn't the woman
Trump
in the city council
Trump is playing in a
should.
Different game.
Right.
He's playing in a presidential game. He wants to win. It's that simple. And by the way, I just may report one more time that the and Stu and I talked about this, and you did too on the Media Project, that Trump on Saturday Night Live drew the largest audience in the history
ratings.
Of that program, or one of them. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
Well, that brings us to our question this morning, our first topic, and that is that there was an article that I sent to you all and that was in the New York Times regarding the GOP fight is now a battle over what defines a conservative, and this following the debate in Milwaukee. And we talked a little bit about this yesterday, and that the question is now, and it was certainly something that was brought up by Rand Paul repeatedly throughout the debate on Tuesday night, which is what is conservative and what is not conservative, and can you be conservative enough, and what does that mean to, and this gets down to the question that you brought up many times, Alan, which is you got to win the primary and then you got to win the general election.
And then you run like hell and towards the middle and try to win the election. But Rand Paul, of course, is a libertarian. And some of the libertarian positions, which many of us like, are hardly an example of contemporary conservatism. So conservatism is sort of everything you want it to be, and you say, you beat your chest and you say, I'm a conservative. And somebody believes you, and somebody says, okay, he is the conservative in the horse race.
Yeah, I wonder here if this is a major crossroads. Is Trump considered, and maybe I'm just not informed on this, is Trump considered the epitome of a Republican? Was he ever considered that before he got into this race?
No,
I never
wasn't.
Thought so.
He didn't consider himself that. He was a Democrat.
Oh, right. Details, details.
Yeah, so then the Republican Party and maybe the definition of conservatism, it's at a crossroads. I mean, the last two elections, presidential, won by a Democrat. John Boehner was forced out in the House because of a schism within the party. Iraq and Afghanistan happened under Bush. Maybe this is just an opportunity for the Republican Party and conservatism to basically form what this new definition in a modern time is of conservatism.
You're overlooking, though, that the Republicans have held on and grown in strength in the states.
They have.
State legislatures and the governor's houses are filled with Republicans now. Mm-hmm. They've made gains against Democrats.
The New York Times article says, most vividly and perhaps consequentially, staking out their ground on immigration, clarifying the divide between restrictionists and pragmatists on an issue that could determine who is the party's nominee. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
We were talking before the show, Stu and I, about how interesting that article was. There's nothing really new in it, yet they put it all together, what we've been seeing over the past, since the Tea Party came into existence. I mean, look at the two leading candidates, at least, for the Republican nomination, Rubio and Cruz, who were unknowns just a few years ago. They were brought in. They rode in on the Tea Party. And now we're looking at them for possible president. That's quite a remarkable move in a short period of time. Mm.
And is that because the others have not stepped up? I mean, I think a lot of people thought Jeb Bush would have been far and away the front runner in this.
Did
not happen.
Yeah, I mean, Jeb Bush, a year and a half ago when we were having this conversation, it was Jeb Bush and Chris Christie and who was going to be the nominee.
Right, and both of them have. And Chris Christie's now in the loser debates. He's not even in the game.
But this morning, we read in the paper that Trump is talking about Christie as a vice presidential nominee. Good man, he says.
Gosh. He was talking about Sarah Palin in the same capacity not long ago. How many vice presidents is he going to have? It'll be like one of his companies.
As many as it takes.
Let's take a break. We'll be back and continue our conversation for a few moments before we go to news at the bottom of the hour. We'll be right back after this short.
Support for WAMC comes from Fort Hill Auto Body, Amherst, Massachusetts. Locally owned and operated since 1997, providing auto body repair, detailing, painting, and glass replacement, a proud supporter of public radio, FortHillAutoBody.com. Turning Stone Resort and Casino, offering racquetball, tennis, and 5 golf courses, including a golf dome. Lessons available, TurningStone.com for details. DeMarchin Hudson, featuring winter fashions, shoes, and accessories for men and women from U.S. and European designers. And holiday gifts, wishing WAMC listeners a joyous holiday season. Open every day, DeMarchin.com. And Munson Williams Proctor Arts Institute Museum in Utica, presenting Monet to Matisse, The Age of French Impressionism, 60 works by Monet, Degas, Renoir, Matisse, and more, closing November 29th, mwpai.org.
Do you want to continue our conversation about the?
Yeah, I was saying in the break that I thought we kind of gave short shrift. Well, is that the expression to this look at what it means to be a conservative?
Well, first of all, I made two comments. One, I'm always interested in what the New York Times is doing and why they're doing it. I always like to project myself into the editor's head, saying, you know, look, we know the New York Times is going to editorialize and that, you know, they're not going to be for the conservative candidate in this election. So one says, okay, let's have a discussion about how hypocritical some of these people consider themselves to be conservatives, or how misguided, or how strange it is. But then I started to think about Bernie Sanders. And Bernie Sanders is a self-identified democratic socialist. Can you imagine in 1955 saying you were a democratic socialist? They'd have you up before HUAC. The McCarthy people would be investigating you. And here he is, immensely popular, and people are saying, okay, if that's what he says he is, then that's what he is.
Yeah, so what we're seeing are divides between liberals and conservatives in both of the major parties. Maybe it's the party system itself that's being strained.
And we also put into this mix this idea, as we've mentioned many times in the show, and we're just about out of time, but that half of the Republicans who are polled want an outsider with no political background who couldn't clearly be identified as a conservative,
right,
which is interesting in and of itself. Mm-hmm. Let's take a break. We'll be back. I'm going to try to stifle a sneeze before the break. I'll try to get it in. We'll be back right after this. It's radio. It's all in the optics.
Can you see me on the radio?
Yes, we can see you on the radio, Stu. We were having just a little shuffling of the chairs to make sure everybody was in camera range. You can see us at WAMC.org and check out the stream and see what we're all up to.
And you never know what you're going to see, by
you
the way.
Never really know what you're going to see.
Remember the famous Seinfeld in which the guy was looking in the other car and said, you picked?
Yes.
Okay.
You never know. You never. Oh, you just
I'm
held
putting,
your nose.
I know. I'm putting my hands under my knees now so that will not happen.
Just a reminder, if you would like to see us all in live splendor tomorrow morning, we would ask for you to join us. We invite you to join us. We will open the doors at 8:30. We'll start at 8:45. The show will go on at 9:00. And we'll have a roundtable panel live at the Linda Norris Auditorium on Central Avenue in Albany. And we've got some tickets left.
Going fast.
For $100. And you get two tickets, breakfast, the lively conversation with our panel dream team, and then you even get a big red mug. So there you go.
And Rosemary will autograph your radio.
I'll bring my pen, yes.
There you go. 1-800-323-9262 and extension 189. Talk to Colleen, and she'll take care of you and get you ready for tomorrow morning. And if you already have tickets, reminder, it is tomorrow morning, and we do ask you to be there around 8:30. Parking in the Linda lot is set, so you can park right there, walk in, and we'll get started about 8:45 to give you your instructions, and then we'll start the show at 9:00.
We'll have a little previous conversation, won't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, people want to,
yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah.
Lots of fun. Okay, so we have other things to talk about, so we'll get to those in just a moment. Before we do, we'll check on letters.
Oh, letters, yes. Okay. Rosemary, says Robert, said the women protesting vendor who sold a Confederate flag was protecting her area. From what, Rosemary? Free enterprise? I don't like the Confederate flag or think it should be flown over any public property, but banning private vendors from selling items that offend some is very dangerous. Let the market deal with such problems by people choosing not to patronize or even picket vendors of offensive material. That's from Bob. Oh.
That's a good point. Yeah. I think she has the right to protest racist symbols being sold. I don't know whether I think she should win the argument or not, but I'm glad she made it.
Desiree makes a similar article. I disagree. Let vendors sell the offensive flag. If few people buy it, that will make space in the booths to promote more saleable items. The marketplace will speak, and then it goes on. But that's all I'm going to read of it, because somebody's going to say, well, you're censoring less. No, but we said keep them short. Okay. And John Hill, John says, listening to the discussion about Trump versus Carson and the ascendance of Rubio and Cruz, all of a sudden I have this strange and intense wish that my alarm clock will go off and I'll wake from this horrible dream. I've been following this stuff day by day for months. Today it struck me how weird this is. I feel like Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz. That's from John. Okay. And Then Christopher says, the Starbucks flap is this. Starbucks tries to make a Christmas cup and comes up with something that a reasonable person would consider acceptable, but angers radical fringe types as not Christmassy enough. Consider also there will be no shortage of Christmas-themed everything everywhere over the next month.
For God's sakes, yes.
Selling the Confederate battle flag is not like selling a Nazi flag, a symbol of racist
hatred. Or is a lot like.
No, is you are so right.
Yep.
Thank you, Joe, for reading along.
That's okay.
Appreciate that. Is a lot like selling a Nazi flag. I was going to argue with myself. A symbol of racist hatred and violence. The woman is asking the people who run the fair to keep that type of thing out of the fair. Okay. And Cody says, good morning, panel. I say, let people sell all the racist Confederate flags they want. It lets me know who I know with who I should not socialize. Also, as someone from the South, it is always puzzled why certain Yankees choose the flag or display the Confederate flag. And that's from Cody. And Ted says, each Starbucks is a franchise. It will be a small business person that gets hurt with a boycott. And, the way that kind of thing works is, let's say NPR does something really stupid. And, you know, the member stations don't like it. Let's say they take a fracking ad and the member stations don't like it. Well, then it's up to the member stations to let NPR know that our listeners don't like it, you know.
Right.
So there's this distinction. Anyway, Marjorie says, is it possible that the Donald has a bet going with some other billionaire to see how much idiocy he can get away with the American public? Oh, boy. Rich says, your theater event should be held on the road. College theaters would be a great place for your broadcasts. Starbucks stock dropped earlier in the week. Did the Donald own any? Tom says, Little Red Cup. Folks, it's a red cup that holds the same expensive burnt coffee it's always held. Where's the war on Christmas? I don't think it's burnt. I like that coffee. And Jason says, folks, it turns out that the initial outrage over the cup was a hoax, and the outrage over the hoax is what went viral and subsequently caught the attention of the media. And he gives us a source, which we cannot go to right now. And Rose Rita, who we hear from a lot, says,
I think it was a hoax.
I need to look that up. Yeah, I didn't know that. This is the blurring of the line between what's real and what's fake.
Well, here's what we do know. Donald Trump called for a boycott of Starbucks because they took the Christmas symbols off of the cup.
Chock full of nuts is behind the whole thing.
So, okay.
Rose Rita says, I protest the color of that mug. And Arthur says, Alan and Rosemary, could you comment on the undemocratic superdelegate practice in the Democratic nominating convention? It would seem that even if Bernie had popular support in primaries, Hillary could win the nomination by tying down the superdelegates who represent long part-time party leaders and hacks before the nominating process begins. To some degree, that's true in both parties, by the way. And what happened, there was one year, way back then. Do you remember that? No, none of you are old enough. But what happened is none of the guys like Teddy Kennedy could get to the convention because they had such strict rules about only people who were elected, you know, in particular primaries. And so they changed the rules and they made some super delegates. That's all I got to say about that. And I think that's it, my friend. Did you see something?
All right. No, I think that's good.
And Michael said,
okay.
Well, what's the University of Missouri football players and students?
Talk about that.
Forming a line preventing the press from entering and covering the situation. All right. And there we are.
Okay. So let's go move on to other issues. I found this interesting from the beginning. This actually kind of goes into one of those things that I'm just surprised that happens. But this year, anybody who watches sports sees these ads just all the time for these fantasy sport gambling sites. DraftKings and FanDuel are two of the big ones. And the two largest daily fantasy sports operators acknowledged Wednesday that New York State was vital to the future of their business and said they would pursue all legal options to remain in operation. This, despite a demand by the state attorney general that they stop allowing the residents to play because their games constituted illegal gambling under state law. I have been shocked from the very beginning that this was legal.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you.
I agree with you.
I mean, I don't, because internet gambling.
It's gambling.
It's gambling.
It's gambling. And I think the point of New York State here may be, you know, that they're putting it out there as well. Is this illegal gambling or not? My guess on this is that New York State is not getting the money out of this that it would if it were, quote unquote, legalized.
And of course, New York State.
They want their money.
And of course, Dewey, New York State is not getting any tax revenues when your local bookie on the corner is selling, is doing gambling, which goes on. I'm shocked, I tell you, you know, all the time.
But let us not forget that this is not, because we're not betting on that the Red Sox or the Giants win.
Right.
We're betting on a fantasy. We're betting on what we think.
Makeup team.
We make up teams. We make up this. We make up that. And we put it together. So they're arguing basically, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Stu, but they're basically arguing that it's a sort of a contest.
It's a game. You know, the question in gaming has always been, is it a game of skill or is it a game of chance?
Right. Is it like a board game?
Right.
Or
is
it like horse racing?
Right.
And in this case, they are arguing.
My son is a junkie. He's a fantasy football and fantasy sport junkie. He says that for 6 months or so, for a year, this was truly just what these two companies say it still is, a game of skill. And you'd have to do all this research, and people got totally into it, and it was a wonderful online community. But companies, corporate minds, saw the money chance in this.
Gambling
and
is gambling.
And now, they organized around it, and they have monetized it. And they are drawing in the profits, and they're being called out state by state. And the difference is in New York, they have so many users here. There's so much money in New York that they can't go up against the Attorney General.
You
here.
Can gamble on anything.
Yeah, of course
I
you
mean,
can.
Do you guys remember Sergeant Bilko at all?
Yes.
Well, Sergeant
in
Bilko.
In reruns.
Yeah.
Phil Silvers.
In order for Sergeant Bilko to get his platoon to come to hear this lady who the colonel told him he had to do, speak on ornithology, birds, he had to make up a gambling thing. And his gambling thing was how many times this lady would hitch her girdle while she was standing there doing the speech. And everybody in the place would go, one, two, three, because it was gambling. You see, you can make gambling out of anything.
Yes.
Alan can talk about women's underwear from this story on gambling. I admire that, but that really was a good metaphor.
That worked.
That worked.
Yeah, that worked.
Thank you.
Congrats.
But I thought it was an episode of CPO Sharky, but apparently also Sergeant Bilko.
Yeah, it's going to come down to this. I mean, what will it take? How many times on this show was the discussion about casinos in New York discussed?
Right.
How many times?
Right.
It comes down to money. New York has its hands out. It's saying, hey, pay us. You want to do this? We're going to get our share of this. Pay us. And that's what it's going to come down to.
So riddle me this, Batman. How when the thing that also got me just, you know, how could this be so when it's so blatant? But two of the owners, of the primary owners of
Jerry
the NFL,
Jones.
Jerry Jones and Robert Kraft, have equity stakes in one of these companies, DraftKings.
Mm-hmm.
Well, didn't Pete Rose get in trouble for that?
Yep.
Well, he certainly did, but that was for betting, not having an investment stake.
There's also lots of stories about people connected with those two companies actually winning big, like insider trading, but on gambling instead of the stock market, which is a form of gambling too.
I mean, if you listen to the ads that are, as Joe mentioned, nonstop, there's tons of money here where people winning millions of dollars, some of these claims. I don't think this is going to come down to a question of gaming versus chance. It's going to come down to can they get money out of this? And they'll work the other stuff as they need to.
I'm also interested in Eric Schneiderman's role in all of this as Attorney General, because every time he brings one of these cases, obviously it brings a certain amount of you know, attention to him for what he's doing. He's getting a lot of settlements. This is just another thing. And the new established route from to get to be governor of New York is to be attorney general and to bring cases. In the beginning, Governor Cuomo had certain territorial disputes with Schneiderman. You know, he had left the attorney generals, but he wanted to bring some of that with him to be when he was governor. But now I think the two guys are getting along quite nicely. They're playing well.
Well, and Schneiderman said, he basically said, hey, don't take any more bets, but there was no legal authority for any actual action to be taken. He can only say, don't do that. We have questions here. The companies kept accepting wagers,
Well, so, but couldn't you either sue them or arrest them for illegal gambling? You would arrest somebody for doing numbers on the corner?
Then it would be a criminal case, and no one's gotten arrested that I know of.
Not yet.
Not yet, but yeah. It may well come down to that, unless they change the law or work it out.
I was offended when Chris Christie in the debate before last, Republican debate before this last one, poo-pooed the question about online gambling. Why are we talking about this or more important things?
Well, he likened it to ISIS.
He did.
Well, meaning saying that
we should talk about foreign policy
instead of this. Yes. Let's take a break. We'll be back and talk about other issues. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back right after this.
Support for WAMC comes from Kasserie Hudson, curated fashion from international designers, including Yoji Yamamoto, Rick Owens, and Andy Mulemeester, Kasserie.com. Albany Realty Group, a local woman-owned real estate company since 2003, educating and counseling sellers and buyers throughout the real estate transaction. AlbanyRealtyGroup.com. And the Department of Theater Arts at SUNY New Paltz, presenting a gender-bending Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, staged in an all-girls prep academy through November 22nd. newpaltz.edu/theater.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us this morning. And we've got a few more minutes, so we'll try to get to a few more topics. Hey, Jimmy Carter's doing better.
Yeah, we read that yesterday.
I hear you know him personally.
Nice. Well, Joe
knows the stars.
Joe's interviewed him a number of times.
Well, when I was in Georgia, I went down and saw him at the Dew Sunday School. At the Maranatha Baptist Church in Plains, Georgia, and before about 200 people, he comes out and he teaches Sunday school from 10 to 11, and you have to get there in the wee hours of the morning, and you go in, and he told the congregation this, which was reported this week by the Carter Center yesterday from the Carter Center, that he is he's doing much better in responding to the treatment. What he said to the congregation was that he feels no different. He just feels great. And so you're sitting there and you're in a room with a guy for 2 hours while he's teaching and also during the church service itself. Mm-hmm. And you're watching him and you find yourself just like looking for some sort of crack, you know, looking for some sort of evidence that the guy's sick, right? And you don't see any. Wow. He looks great. He sounds great. It's just amazing.
So what
it's
was
absolutely
one of the
amazing.
So what was one of the lessons he taught?
I thought the lesson was about the Bible and the various translations of the Bible and how you can pretty much translate the Bible into whatever you want it to be a method of love or a method of hate.
Isn't that interesting?
Did he talk at all about how there's more words in it than in
the text code? He did not mention
fewer
that.
Words,
I think he was fewer words. Yes, I think he saved that in his writing for Mr. Cruz on Tuesday's debate, but it was really something. But I tell you, I was really glad to hear the news sort of officially. But man, you look and one of the things when you go through the town on every street, on every house in the town, and I don't think I'm exaggerating. Every house has the sign that says Jimmy Carter for Cancer Survivor.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
I admire him very much. Yeah. I think he got a bum deal from this country, which seems to say they want decent religious men who with good intentions. And then we get one in there and we just call him, you know, a wimp.
Yeah.
He's 91 years
91
old.
91, and from what I hear, he's very active.
He's
not sitting around watching soap operas.
No, he was telling us that last week he built houses for Habitat for Humanity. He built two houses.
Like pictures of
like you do
that.
When you're 90,
yeah.
And then and he had his own tool belt, and then he was out in the wood shop making something, and then he gave some award to Trisha Yearwood in Nashville. I mean, it's
I told my mother, look at Jimmy Carter's 90. You need to get off your butt and start doing more.
Build a house, Mom.
Do something. Start earning your keep around here, Mom. Hey, is your mother still coming tomorrow?
She is. In fact, I think I'm supposed to remind her. So if you're listening, Mom, she's making apple tarts for you all.
Oh, that is so sweet.
Uh-huh.
That is really
nice. She's going to make them tonight, but bake them tomorrow morning so they'll be warm.
Well, we can't wait to see your mother. That is very, very cool.
Heard of, she's a legend. She's a legend around here.
That's great. Also, we have this story about... Rosemary, hopefully you will understand why I'm so interested in hearing your thoughts on young women living at home with their parents.
My mother and I were talking about this today. I've kind of carried the trend to an extreme. I'm still living with her as a senior citizen. Fascinating story. Women are first coming out of college with a lot of debt, more than they ever had before from college loans. They're marrying later. They're interested in careers, and so you need money for extras like travel and entertainment. Yeah. So they're living at home. And the article is all filled with things about, well, you know, I can't wait to be independent. You know, my mother waits up for me. I think it's a great deal. I liked it far better than living with a husband. My mother cooks. The laundry's done. There's no dust bunnies under my bed. Living with your mother. More of you should try it, girls. It's great.
And the article also said that more guys than women live at home.
That has been the 43%.
Well, if you go to Greece, you see a lot of that. I mean, we had dinner. We were lucky with somebody whose kids live at home.
Well, in Bosnia, they build houses with extra floors, and that's where you want your children to come back as adults and live with their family, so your grandchildren are still in the house.
Our house was built with that, with a sort of a wing for separate quarters for the parents or in-laws.
Yeah.
And
not a bad thing at all.
You mean you built your house?
No. Our house was built.
I see. Originally.
We moved into our house.
So there was.
Now it's there, and you know it's just sort of an incentive for our in-laws to come live with us.
No, that's great.
Is it? Sure. Yeah, it is.
No, it is.
It's not so good for the economy. It's nice for the American family, but it's not good for the economy because these kids are not buying their own houses or renting, buying cars, because they're paying off loans instead of contributing to our economy.
But they can't get jobs that pay enough.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
It is also an international phenomenon. It's not only here. It is. I was listening just this morning on my way in through the dink and the dank, listening to the BBC do a story on this very issue. I think they call them waiters or something like that. Waiters. They're waiting to get out.
But, I mean, I was given the advice, and I think it's good advice to students, which is, you know, if you can live at home as long as you possibly can to save some money and to be able to – I think I lived at home until I was 25.
It's a gift to give to your kids. One of my sons at least came back and stayed. But, you know, you don't have to charge them ruinous rent. They get their feet on the ground before they have to go out. I think it's I think it's
good. And they can come and go.
There's a point at which I was at graduate school. I lived with five guys. And then when that collapsed, I went home for a while.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Did you use a rent?
In most cases, you're always welcome.
But you have to do your own laundry.
Oh, do you?
No, it's magic. I put it in the washing machine, and I turn around, and there it's all out and dried and folded. I have a great washing machine.
So let me just.
Thanks,
Mom. We only have about a minute, but I remember when I was a kid, and you bring your mom or dad to school in like third or fourth grade, and like how nervous you'd get about your parent coming to class.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Are you going to be like that tomorrow with having your mom there?
Yes, I am. I've been drilling her on what she can and cannot say.
Because I'm thinking we can get some really good information out of your mom tomorrow.
She's your first guest. If I'm you, that's what I do.
Well, if you want to join in on the fun, 1-800-323-926 to extension 189. It's a $100 pledge. It all goes in the lockbox, by the way.
It does, every bit of it.
Goes in the lockbox. You get a big red mug, you have breakfast, and you get to meet Rosemary and her mom. So what's more than that? All right. Thank you all for being with us. Appreciate it. Stu, always a pleasure. So happy when you can make the trip, and we look forward to seeing you again.
Thrilled to be here. Always fun.
Great. Rosemary, we'll see you tomorrow. Alan, see you tomorrow.
Can't get rid of me.
You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.